Hello, everyone. Thank you for attending this session. My name is Nick Maroutsos, and I'm a director at Capstream Capital. It's a fixed income absolute return product that was recently launched in June. Kind of on the back of the last session, I'm not sure how many of you were here, but we're here to discuss essentially the who, what, where, why, and anything else you want about the fixed income industry. Why allocate to fixed income? Is it really a defensive asset class? Considering it's underperformed cash for the past 5 years, I tend to disagree. What are my risks as an investor in this asset class? Do you know what your manager is investing in? And lastly, how are they, as managers, producing returns? Are they really using credit to give you your alpha when it's really just beta? We're here to dispel some of the rumors, discuss the risks, as well as talk about how you can generate stable and consistent returns as well as achieve alpha in this sector. You don't need to move down to the credit curve. You don't need to invest in CDOs, subprimes. You don't need to invest in illiquid securities, but you do need to stay ahead of the curve, be nimble and innovative within this market as it has changed quite significantly. This is what we're here to talk about today. I have Kumar Palghat with me. He is the founder of Capstream Capital, and he will discuss what these risks are and how to actually make profit. It's out with the old, no more benchmark hugging, risk aversion, sub-cash returns, and in with the new, alpha and setting a high watermark.
Wow. Thank you, Nick. Sure did set the stage for me to be controversial, I guess. I just came off the trading floor, and let me tell you guys, it's not over yet. Equity markets are down. New Zealand dollar's gone through 70 cents. Carry trades are over. A couple more hedge funds in New York probably are going under. The Fed's pricing in a rate cut probably by September. And just before I left, you know, I'll go through my presentation shortly. So just before I left as well, I said, you know, if I was sitting in 1998, I was sitting at PIMCO. I don't know if you guys heard, there's a couple of PIMCO people who were just world's largest bond fund manager. That's how I used to work for 10 years, and I worked the World Bank for 10 years. And I said, if I sat in 1998, does it feel exactly like this? Would I have said 10 years later, I'm going to be sitting in Sydney, Australia, and thinking it's not one LTCM that's blowing up, it's 30 LTCMs blowing up. Could I have predicted it? Probably not. So I think you're in for the long haul, and you know we can discuss it during the presentation afterwards at any time as well. So it's not over yet. Things are pretty bleak out there. Funding is really tightened up, and the way you can say funding is tightened up because short-term rates, you know, the RBA raised rates to 6.5 last week. I publicly said they shouldn't have done it, and I still think they shouldn't do it. And short-term borrowing is actually about 7% today in Australia. In New Zealand, it went through 9% this morning. So there is a liquidity crunch happening. Anyway, we're here to talk about bonds, the most boring asset class you could find when there are other sexy things you can do. And I'll try to give you a little bit of rundown of why bonds, why the asset class, what the risk is, what the return expectations are, etc. And then also conclude on what we think are risks and opportunities going forward, because there's always opportunities when markets are mispriced. So let's start off with why bonds as an asset class. Bonds have always played a good hedge. It may not be the perfect hedge, right? I mean, your equity markets are down 6 to 8% in the last month and a half. Bonds have returned 1.5% or 2%. So in a crisis environment, bonds do well. It does provide you protection and some form of income over a period of time. But the only problem is rates have come down to historical lows. But there's lots of things changing in bond markets. You know, the old days of clipping a coupon versus just collecting your principal at the end of the day has changed. Lots of derivatives, options, volatility, alpha, beta, which half the people that trade even don't understand what they are. Risks in the marketplace, and why own assets, and what you're trying to get out of it. So bonds still play a good role. I think it's important in an asset class to have some of it. Question is, how much should you have in it, and how much rope are you giving your manager to hang themselves, and what return expectations are you going to get out of it, and are you willing to put your money away and go to sleep at night is the biggest question. To me, fixed income as an asset class is going through a structural change, a phenomenal structural change. Gone are the days of, you know, clipping coupons, new issuers are coming to the marketplace, corporations are issuing, there's mortgage-backed securities, there's asset-backed CDOs, CLOs, CPPIs, CDO squared, anything you can think of is being made up. New instruments, Benchmarks are changing. How do you measure performance? You know, here are people talking about all these products. What do they return? 3%, 4%? And you've got to go through all this process to figure out what they have even in their portfolios. Globalization, what does that mean? You can sit anywhere in the world, trade any product anywhere. Every one of us turns on CNBC or CNN and we watch what's happening tick by tick. The economic environment is changing. The American consumer is just spending as much as they can and using up savings from the rest of the world and saying thank you very much. You give us all your goods and products, we'll in turn give you something called a greenback, and one day it'll be worth something. So the world is changing and always probably has changed over a period of time. As you know, the question becomes is, what are you investing in the asset class? And I have two daughters at home, and I'm sure a lot of you have kids as well. And as I was sitting this morning, and I haven't been home very often these days given the market conditions, and my daughter said, Dad, I'm at school today and there's all sorts of stuff happening in the market. Can you please explain to me some of the definitions that these guys talk about? And I said, if I can't explain to my 12-year-old daughter what I'm doing, how can I explain to my investors what I'm really doing? So she says, there's things about accurate pricing and evaluation. What does that mean? And I said, well, in layman terms, it means Bob, who's the guy that sold me those securities, is the guy that's making the price for me. So I got to call him up. He might be in a bar somewhere, and he'll tell me what the price of the bond is. And she says, what's a CDO, and how do you value it? I said, well, you can go back to the ancient methods and call it as making things up. That's how you value a CDO. She says, what is liquidity? I said, liquidity is when you call your banker and he doesn't return your call and you're waiting for his phone call to come back. And then she said, what is this redemption? You know, I want my money back. And I said, well, it's something called a prospectus that we give out to people, but most people don't read it. And when there's a problem, they come to you and you show them the prospectus and you say, hang on a second, we're going to mail you a software called the Hedge Fund Guy software that will come in the mail. That'll tell you how you get your money back. So anyway, back to bonds. So what were you lending to? You're lending to countries, you're lending to corporations, you're lending to governments over a period of time. So that's changed. But what has also changed is the type of instruments that you're trading, right? The plain vanilla instruments such as governments. There's a question here in the last session that someone had asked about liquidity. I don't know if the gentleman's here or not, but what's really happened is physical securities are no longer trading in the marketplace. You cannot get a price for it. You got to hedge yourself using derivatives, i.e. you got to use swaps or indexes or buy protection or sell protection. Even that is pretty hard to do, and that's just an over-the-counter between two different counterparties. Look at the volume of interest rate swaps outstanding in Europe and in the U.S. alone in the last 4 or 5 years compared to what the outstanding amount of debt is. Debt as physical paper that someone's borrowed in the world market's about $30 trillion to $40 trillion. But the derivative market today is about $260 trillion. So you tell me that this problem that we're having today is going to go away anytime soon, because no one has any clue how many pieces of papers and how many contracts exist out there that have been developed over the last few years. Risks, leverage, phenomenal word. People, why do we end up in the situation we did today? Because investors in a low rate environment wanted high returns. Every client that I had, I walked in the door and I said, hey, I'm a bond fund manager, I'm here to protect your assets. They said, ha, I can find somebody else, he'll give me 10 or 12% returns. He said, there's no volatility in the portfolio. And guess what? They said, okay, if you want 10% return in a 5% environment, I'll create a product for you. We'll give you 12% returns. Don't ask me for your money back when things blow up, but you'll have 12%. So that's what's happened, and that's why we've created the problem that we're in today. Benchmarks. What is a benchmark? A benchmark is something you're measuring yourself against what your expected returns are, right? So to me, a benchmark is something that says, I like the characteristics of a benchmark. I like the return characteristics because over long periods of time, I like the way it behaves. But I also like the risk characteristics of the benchmark. Then I hire a manager and say, here's your benchmark, beat the benchmark, and then earn your living above it. But what happens when you give people benchmarks? You end up hugging a benchmark, because why? We all have business risk. We're all worried about A beating B, B beating C, and what am I going to do on the next board meeting that I'm going to go talk about? And if I hug the index and if I'm part of the pack, then I'm okay, then I can survive and I can get done. But you know what? Ultimately, you pick the benchmark, you're going to get the return characteristic of the benchmark. If you'd picked the wrong benchmark in the last few years, you'd have gotten negative returns. Your manager could have produced the alpha, but absolute returns would have been negative. So when you pick a benchmark or when you allocate to a certain asset class, make sure you like the characteristics of the benchmark. Make sure you believe in it. Make sure if you get the returns, you're happy with it. Then hire a manager. Performance. Everybody talks about performance. This is directly from a Mercer survey. One of my other colleagues earlier on had talked about performance. And I look at the chart and I think, in the early days, or you're getting there now, let's hope this blood continues, at least in my view, for the next 6 months, and then you'll have fantastic opportunities. In the old days, there's a lot of spread, a lot of credit, a lot of countries. Yield curves were different. Spreads were wide. Interest rates were wide. But over time, look what's happened. This is the Mercer survey on performance returns, and if you look at the chart, the blue line, or the blue bar here, basically talks about what the returns of a median fund manager have been. The returns themselves have been coming down in the asset class, as you can see, and the dispersion of returns is also narrowing, i.e. everybody's playing the same game. Everybody's looking for the same things as global liquidity glut just put so much money into the system that all fund managers roughly ended up being in this category with low returns with very little dispersion. Are you getting diversification benefits? I don't think so. Are you getting high returns? Probably not. So let's wait for this crisis to go through and we'll get back to the situation of getting good returns. What's happening in the world with globalization? Communications increased. People are trading everywhere. There are 8,000 hedge funds in the U.S. And you can get as many different types of products that you want. Anything that you'd like, you can. It's available. Borders are disappearing. There are more people in China trading a single day than the U.S. has had for the last 15 or 20 years. There are more Japanese housewives trading currency markets than probably professional money managers over a period of time. The world has changed. What about interest rates? I wish I was here in 1981 and said, okay, here's a bond. It's yielding 14%. This is the U.S., I'm sorry. Australia was probably about 18 or 20%. And you could have said, look, I'll go buy this 30-year bond. I still have 81-2011, so you got another 4 years to go. It was 18 or 20%. Locked it away, put it in a box, and said, if you're a fund manager, don't call me till 2011, right? But 2011 is fast approaching. So bull market in bonds is coming to an end. The reason why this looks the way it does is because sometime in 1997, past 93, Greenspan came into the office, Volcker came into the office. Everybody said, oh, the inflation on war is won, short-term rates are where they are, the world's changed, Clinton was in the office, no more budget deficits forever, bond fund managers are going to be out of a job because business cycles exist, won't exist anymore, you're going to be in a bull market forever. But rates have really come down to historical lows. What does that do? It pumps a lot of liquidity into the system. People lever up, people borrow, people trade. You end up with a lot of problems over a period of time. So what's going to happen is you're going to have to creep back, but the question is how far do you have to go before it becomes normal? What are normal rates, right? That's the question the market's trying to ask today. So be careful. Even though you invest in fixed income, even though I'm a fixed income manager, be careful of what you're buying and what benchmark you use, because that's the characteristic that you're going to get. And if I showed someone this chart today, and you know, I showed my 12-year-old today and said, what would you do? And she goes, Dad, this looks like a great chart. Luckily, she said I wouldn't buy it, so maybe she's going to be a fund manager one day. Not sure. Anyway, so what's the conclusion of in the asset class and what we own? You got to make sure that your investment guidelines or your managers make sure that they produce the returns they're going to produce over a period of time because they're collecting a fees, right? They're collecting a fee that says that you're paying for a service. You got to worry about the asset class you're in and the index that you're in. Make sure that you put some form of an absolute return format to your index. It can be done today. You can say, I think this asset class should produce me 7% returns, 8% return. Why 7? If the RBA cash rate is 6.5, you may as well take your money and go stick it in the bank. You're going to get 6.5% returns. If you think a manager can provide you 8% returns, then you say, look, you're going to get 8%. You're going to get paid only after you perform above the 6.5, because I can get 6.5 somewhere else without taking the risk and without having to deal with all the definitions that you're going to put with. So at this stage, I'll give you a few more definitions. This is directly related to jargon that the street uses. Hopefully you enjoyed these as much as I did. So my daughter said, Dad, what does it mean when they say it's challenging conditions? So I thought about it and I said, well, when you're down, double-digit returns, then you say it's challenging conditions. Then she says, what does it mean when you're cautiously optimistic? I said, that's when you're only down single-digit returns. She said, but Dad, there's all these Greek words people use, beta and alpha. So what does beta mean? And I said, well, beta sort of means you're punting on the markets. She says, but then what's alternative beta? I said, well, you're punting on stuff you don't understand, and you call it alternative beta. She said, what's alpha? I said, well, alpha is sort of like your imaginary friend. And then the last piece, she said, I started the business recently, and she said, Dad, how's it going? You haven't been home a lot. Markets are moving. Have you been doing all right? And I said, look, there's something called negative correlation, i.e. you want to be doing things when others are doing poorly. And she said, and in your case? I said, well, everyone else is making money. That's negative correlation. So let's conclude, and I'm happy to talk about risks in the markets as well and where we're going, and then we'll talk about Catherine. So what are the risks? Excess leverage in the system today, is it going to go away? In my view, probably not. Not anytime soon. Every day you're going to wake up, there's going to be a hedge fund blowing up. There's going to be some counsel that owns a portion of a CDO or a leveraged CDO. It's because problems that were created in 2001 in the U.S. when there was a perfect storm when rates went down to 1%. What should normal rates be? Normal rates should be where they are now. It should be about 5, 5.5, 6% given where inflation is. Will the Fed cut rates? Most probably yes, the Fed will cut rates because they have to bail out somebody else. There's a rule called 363 rule, which is what they have to get to. What does the 363 rule mean? 363 rule means if you're a banker, you borrow money at 3%, you lend that money at 6%, and at 3 o'clock you go to the golf course. That's what it means. You stay in the 363 rule for 3 to 5 years, you're bailed out. You can go do some other things that you want to. The question is, will the Fed bail out hedge funds now? Probably not. They don't want to. But will they end up bailing out hedge funds? Yes, they will, because it's going to end up affecting the economy as a whole. And when, you know, in general, investors start losing money, then the Fed will be concerned. Two, high commodity oil prices. Completely new game. You got 3 billion people from India and China joining the global economy. Demand for these products will be high. They will one day become consumers of goods. Today, they're producers of goods. That will not change in the next year, 2 years, 5 years. It will take 5 or 10 years, which means that's not going to go away. And Australia's placed really well in that. Three, China stops buying treasuries. I put that up because the imbalance is so big today. U.S. is a debtor nation. The savings all reside in Asia. If the Asian central bank decide to pull money out of treasuries, treasuries will not be at 5%. They'll have to be a lot higher. You'd have to pay more to borrow money. Lastly, tight labor markets. Everywhere you look, unemployment rate in the Western world is somewhere around 3.5% to 4%, which eventually means that people are doing well. People are doing extreme well given housing markets, maybe in the last week or two, but people are doing really well overall, which means inflation is a problem. Central banks have a very hard job on their hand. Lastly, this big debate about unfunded pension liability, which exists across the board, is real because there is a baby boom. And as the baby boomers after World War II start retiring, especially in the U.S., now that they're going to come to retirement age, you're going to see more and more demand for income-like products, more and more demand for pension, which has to be funded by a younger population that doesn't exist in the West. The younger population exists in the East. What's the best solution? Is to figure out how to tax the younger population in the East so you can get your money in retirement and then let them worry about it when they get to retirement. Is that what's happening? Sort of. That's what's happening, right? Because the West is spending the money and spending as quickly as they can. And they're telling the East, you give us your products, we'll give you cash. One day that cash is going to be worth something. That's what's happening in the world today. I'll stop there and take some questions.